And now Chicago waits. In the Van Dyke trial, the Jason Van Dyke trial, the white cop charged with murder and aggravated battery in the shooting death of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald with a knife in his hand, high on PCP. The jury has been given its final instructions. They've listened to the final arguments of both prosecutors and defense. I'm standing near the courthouse trying to take it all in, trying to think of what it means and thinking back to years ago now. I wrote a column that it would tear the city apart. It's torn the politics of the city apart for sure. Rahm Emanuel is no longer seeking re-election because City Hall hid that video. What will happen? I don't know. I guess we're going to find out what Chicago is really made of. This is John Cass from the Chicago Tribune. Husband, father, columnist, mayoral candidate, kind of. And Jeff Carlin, producer, executive producer of the Rokon Show with Anna Devalonis, is back in the studio putting this together. Hoping I don't run on too long, but I've got some stuff to say. And while I'm near 26 and Cal, I know where you are. You're smack dab in the middle of it on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
A few weeks ago, let's say a few podcasts ago, really, maybe a week ago, I sat down with William Calloway, the activist and organizer who pushed for the release of the Laquan McDonald video, the infamous video. And he wants Jason Van Dyke convicted and thinks that will be justice. And so I decided to be fair about this, to talk to Kevin Graham, president of the Fraternal Order of Police. And in our conversation, I got into a little argument with one of his board members, one of the officials of the union, Martin Preeb, who's a brilliant writer, wrote a great, great series of essays called Wagon Men, about the guys who work in police wagons, but who's had problems with the Tribune. Doesn't like the reporting. And so you'll hear that exchange, and you're also going to hear my interview with Mr. Graham. One thing, though, before we begin, I have to bring up this Kavanaugh story, because it's not going away, and it's important. Now, this thing's changing by the minute, right? By the minute. We could have a vote, by the time you hear this, the Senate could have voted on whether to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. I'm just going to focus on one little small aspect of it right now. And that is I know you might find this idiotic, and maybe it is, but part of the reason I do this podcast is I work out the column while I'm talking to you. And I'm thinking about a column about Matt Damon. Yeah, Matt Damon. Maybe a month or 2 months ago, when his buddy Harvey Weinstein, the sexual harasser and Hollywood icon producer, was in the news and his bad behavior was starting the Me Too movement, Matt Damon came out in defense of Harvey Weinstein. He said we shouldn't conflate patting a woman on the butt to rape or sexual harassment. And he was murdered for it. I mean, he wasn't, like, castrated for it. The, you know, like that Georgetown professor that said white men should be castrated and their private parts fed to the hogs. Yeah, that's another piece of tolerance from the left. I can't wait till they take over. But he was, Matt Damon was vilified. Alyssa Milano and other actresses all got upset. Everybody gets upset. And they screamed at him and spanked him and, you know, lectured him and hectored him and shamed him. But an amazing thing happened just the other day. And with all this stuff going on about Kavanaugh and the changing news every 5 minutes, we forget that Matt Damon showed up on Saturday Night Live just last week to play Judge Kavanaugh in a skit, a cold open, they said, where he played him as a drunk and a fool. Now, there's no evidence about Kavanaugh. There's no corroborating statements about Kavanaugh. All we have are accusations that he's a sexual monster. We know that there are cartoons that have been written, drawn, that go after his family in print in newspapers. There's one about his daughter praying on her knees at bedtime, praying to the Lord for the soul of her rapist father. This is how low we're getting. Anyway, back to Matt Damon and me trying to work out a column. You see, Matt Damon is the iconic Jason Bourne, the tough guy, the man who could knock you out with one punch. Stoic, silent, strong. Yeah, strong and silent type. Who can even fight the deep state. But there he was on Saturday Night Live, making up for his past sins, making up for the sin of trying to defend Harvey Weinstein by joining the mob into savaging Kavanaugh. It was as if I could imagine him at the Salem witch trials saying, "Yes, there are witches." I could imagine Matt Damon there saying, maybe in the Middle Ages, "I saw the woman fly round the tower and turn herself into a black swan." There are witches, Matt Damon, or there are gutless toads like you. Broke, and he whimpered, and he got himself on Saturday Night Live to try to rehabilitate his image. And there's something rather Soviet about it, isn't it? Something rather Maoist about it. The man, the icon, Jason Bourne, as Craven, mocking Kavanaugh. The issue isn't not whether Kavanaugh did or did not do these things. We don't know, but we don't have any evidence so far. I haven't seen any real evidence. All I see is a lot of chatter and screaming. And people scream at Trump, and people scream at each other. This is about the federal government. My friends, this is about the power that the Supreme Court should not have. This is about federalizing all the power of our country and using the Supreme Court to pick winners and losers. And now that the Democrats are worried about losing the Supreme Court, losing power, they unleash this torrent that tears people up. And what it's also doing is what it's doing to people like Matt Damon, Jason Bourne, on his knees, saying, "Please don't hate me. I'll show you I can hate Kavanaugh too." And this action, I'm trying to work it out for a column, but this business of doing that is one of the most repulsive things I've seen in all the Kavanaugh saga. Jason Bourne, tough guy, Craven.
Matt Damon.
After I left the courthouse, I went to talk to Kevin Graham, president of the Fraternal Order of Police. Unknown to me, they have a problem with my newspaper, the Chicago Tribune. And one of their members, union officials, was in the interview at first, Martin Preeb, an excellent writer, but I think he hates the Tribune. And he and I got into it. Well, we got into it. You could hear it for yourself. But what Kevin Graham has to say is worthy. It should be heard, just like William Calloway should be heard.
We're on the record with Fraternal Order of Police President Kevin Graham. We're talking about the Laquan McDonald trial, Jason Van Dyke trial. Did you think Van Dyke got a fair trial?
No, I don't. I think that there was a video that was hidden by people that had nothing to do with the police. And then when it came out, it was inflammatory because people were expecting something. It's certainly not an easy video to see. And then Jason was prohibited from talking, first by department directives, and then when he was accused of a crime, the judge put a decorum order on him and would not let him talk to the press.
But I get to talk. I get to talk all I want. And I get to say what I saw in the video and what's going on with the cops. Other columnists get to talk. Other reporters, other, you know, broadcast. Everyone gets to talk. Politicians get to talk.
Right.
He didn't get to talk.
No, he didn't. And you know,
Until the end.
Well, no, he didn't even get to talk at the end. Because then when he got to talk about his feelings on the case, not specifically about the case, the judge had him taken back into custody and raised his bond. I've never seen that before. It seems that there is one set of civil rights for the public and a second set of civil rights for the police. And really, that's just unfair.
Earlier, you mentioned that a lot of this is about the video and people who are not police holding on to the video. I don't want to be played detective, but it sounds like you're talking about the mayor of Chicago, City Hall, holding the video until after his reelection and then dropping it with a $5 million payoff.
Well, I can't tell you.
Or let's say settlement.
Right. I can't tell you exactly who had the ability to hold that tape. I can tell you this, that it was none of my members. We don't have that ability to hold this tape.
But what effect did it have?
Well, the effect that it had is everybody was concentrating on the police. Now there's a hysteria that somehow the police are out of control, when in fact things were already being addressed on that to change our use of force policy. The things were being changed in terms of having tasers. We were working on trying to actually get the city to realize that we have already been making great strides in changing the things that aren't working so that we can make sure that things work in the future.
Did that ACLU, Chicago Police, what do you call it?
The agreement.
Was that after McDonald?
Yes, it was. Yes.
So it was after McDonald that the city agreed.
Correct.
That your members would fill out extensive forms.
Correct.
After every contact.
And I think the key component here is not just fill out these long forms, but also, number one, now you are subject to all kinds of criticism that you are stopping particular individuals. People can make what they want of it. But then there's discipline involved if you just make a mistake. Even if it is a reasonable mistake, you can be disciplined. You can be suspended. Now, why would I want to get involved in stopping people when they're going to try and take money out of my pocket for making a legitimate mistake?
Well, did that have, there was much talk about it, did it impact or lead to cops not getting out of their cars?
Absolutely.
There was like an 85% drop-off in contacts?
Between 75 and 85% drop-off in people being stopped. And of course, if you're a criminal and you know the police aren't going to stop you, then you certainly have a free rein to do what you want.
And if I had friends, the friends I do have who are police, I say, don't get out of your car. That's what I tell them. Don't get out of your car, finish your work, and get home. Because if you step out, you could be like part of a political thing. And I think a lot of guys feel, men and women in the police department feel that.
I think one of the key components in both this trial and in the anti-police sentiment that has been going on is that there are a lot of people that support the police, but they haven't been getting any answers. And so suddenly they're becoming either anti-police or anti-administration because nobody's giving them any answers. We have tried since I took office to try and communicate. And we have certainly had we've had to deal with some bad press. I will tell you this, since I know we're on the record.
Yeah,
this we were our board made a decision not to deal with the Tribune because we felt that the reports that were coming out were biased and not accurate. And it was a board decision that was taken last night to talk to John Cass because we had confidence that you would give an accurate report. That doesn't say that it's going to be in favor of us, but that it would be accurate.
What is the issue with the Tribune?
Well, there was several articles that were written by individual columnists that were slanted. They did not give the side of the police officers.
That would be like Rahm Emanuel saying, I'm not going to deal with the Tribune because Cass has been kicking me in the butt. Right?
Well,
I mean,
it's
almost like he would cut off his own nose to spite his face or something, which you wouldn't do, right?
But the board felt that if there are if there was an individual columnist that was going to be fair about things, and we're not asking anybody to be
love
with the
say,
police.
You know what they say when a reporter dies and politicians say he's fair.
What's that?
That's the time the reporter should get back up out of the grave and punch somebody in the mouth. Okay? Because fair to a politician doesn't mean fair to the public, right?
Well, here's the thing.
Hey, Marty, guess what? I'm interviewing this guy. If you don't want to,
trading on my subject matter, and that doesn't hold any water.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Thank you very much. Awesome. But you did write a great book, and I wrote a great review of it.
Write another one too.
Good. I'll hold my water until you do.
You know what?
Let's get back to this. I don't want to litigate.
I don't want
to litigate Marty's issues. The issue is to me that the reason I'm here is not because of your board meeting.
Right. I know that.
I don't really care either way. You guys don't want to talk to me. Fine. You don't want to talk. Fine. I'm here because the other week, I interviewed William Calloway.
Mm-hmm.
He's the activist. They pushed for the police video. And I wanted to be fair and interview you guys, too.
And that's all we asked for. I'm not saying the police are perfect, okay?
Right.
What I'm saying is that we deserve a fair shake, both in court and in the public's mind. And so what I'm trying to get at here is that I think there has been an anti-police sentiment that has grown out of the Jason Van Dyke case because I don't think the public's been getting answers. And certainly when you have a decorum order that says that the defendant in the case can't speak, I think there's a big piece that is missing. And I don't care whether you are Joe Citizen on the street or you're a reporter from any news organization, you should be able to hear both sides of the story.
Well, one thing I wish is that, I'm not going to litigate who said what about whatever, because
sure.
I've had there are plenty of police officers who think I'm fair, and there are plenty of those who don't.
Okay.
Particularly a couple deceased ones who ran burglary rings for the outfit. Okay? Remember him? He lived in Deerfield. His name was Bill Hanhart. You remember him?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I was unfamiliar with the case. This goes back a while.
Right.
I certainly wasn't the president of FOP then. But I'm sure you did your due diligence in finding out what was going on.
I interviewed burglars, and I read 302s, and I followed the cases. And the guy ran the burglary ring for the outfit, the National Burglary Ring, approved by the Chicago outfit while he was chief of detectives, for God's sake.
Oh, that was before my time.
Well, I'm just saying, okay?
I got you.
The case here, though, is when reporters, okay, you have a crime, any crime, you know, we have to go through News Affairs and get the info. But sometimes that's not the real info, what happened. You want to talk to coppers, and for years, the police department has ratcheted that thing down so that a detective can't say something to a guy. Like, say, you know, I'm now not a kid anymore, neither are you. But say, if we've known each other for 30, 40 years, you could say something to some guy, and you know he's going to quote you accurately, and it'll give some indication of what's going on in the investigation. Those politicians and the police don't want to talk. They don't want to talk to reporters. And then they get upset when we do report.
You know what? Those it's funny. When we're talking about civilian oversight, when we're talking about a consent decree, when we're talking about additional police accountability, one of the things that is consistently left out is in bringing the FOP involved in things to try and get the correct story out to the public, because I think that's what the public wants. They want an accurate depiction of what happens.
Or at least your version of what happened.
Okay,
right?
And you know what? And you know, hey, there are times that I will say, hey, you know, look, we may have made a mistake over here. That happens. But I think an honest explanation of what occurred doesn't lead to people mistrusting the police, and it doesn't lead to people wanting giant reforms.
The problem with this issue is that it's taken a century or more to build this the police reputation, right? I mean, there were cops in the old days when, before you and I were even out of grade school, what happened to Jason Van Dyke wouldn't be a crime in those days. He had a knife, that's it, it's done. Or Two Gun Pete, notorious black officer, you know, icing people up and down the South Side. No, it wasn't like a big deal. It was more like a bogeyman story. Two Gun Pete will get you, be a good child. So it's not something that I think the police have built on their own. It's the political culture of Chicago that's helped do it.
Well, yeah? You know, one of the things that I think needs to be stated here is how much the police department has changed over the years. When I started as a police officer, and this was just the 80s,
when I started as a reporter.
You know, we would put the car radio on, because not everybody had portable radios. We would put the car radio on the loudspeaker so you could hear your radio calls while you were out of the car. Now, you still had to run back to the car to use the radio, but, you know, those were the days. And so there was a little bit more acceptance because, you know, if you were out handling something, you had to handle it. There wasn't always somebody going to be coming to help. So technology has changed things. The caliber of officer.
The body cams.
Body cams. I will tell you this. People had bulletproof vests, but they were very seldom. They were very expensive. People didn't wear them, you know, because they were so expensive. Not many people had them.
Plus, why would they, you know, I remember when cops started reading my column, even before when I was just writing at City Hall. And they would call me and say, oh, I read that. I said, where'd you read that? There was a mimeograph or a ditto, a roll call. I said, why don't you guys buy the paper? You know, it's too much money, you know?
I actually remember, you know, how when we were writing reports, how you had to use carbon paper over and over again.
Sure.
And before there was air conditioning in squad cars, which was the greatest invention that ever came to police work.
And also the Febreze, which was also a good invention.
I got to finish the air conditioning.
Yeah.
In the summertime, when you had to write a report, you had to turn the overhead light on. Well, all the
bugs and mosquitoes would come in the car. So you had to roll up the windows. It'd be 100 degrees in the car, and you're dripping all over your report. So air conditioning was wonderful. But I'm digressing into old police work. So
the what happened in the trial, there was I got reports, letters, email calls from retired cops, detectives, and current police officers who know that I won't, you know, rat them out. And they were upset at seeing police officers testifying, brought to testify, as if they were supporting the prosecution side. How do you deal with it? You know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're saying.
And they feel guilty about it. I'm sure some of most of them do. There's pressure on them. They get called to court. They testify to the best of their ability or what they can get away with. But how does that impact the working in a district? Oh, you're the one who testified. You know, how does that work?
You know, despite people saying that there's a code of silence, because I do not know of that.
Only in media.
Anyway. I think what people are seeing is an extremely aggressive prosecutor who is trying to get them to say only what they want them to say. And unfortunately, I think some of the officers were buying into it, where they probably should have called and asked for legal defense to find out if in fact, they could be compelled to say only what the prosecution wants them to say.
Some of these police officers are facing their own criminal cases for covering up the Laquan story.
Accused of it,
alleged to have. And therefore, I don't think they felt comfortable doing anything other than what the prosecution
I understand that. And, you know, I've said this before. I'll say it again. It's, you know, I try not to interject religion into things.
I do all the time.
Well, Matthew, Luke, and John wrote the gospel according to Jesus. They all had different accounts of what Jesus did. Which one of them has been lying? Okay. None of them. Because it was their perspective of it. And I think to try and take one police officer and say, well, you're lying because you saw something that the other didn't see. And I think what's very clear that came out yesterday in the trial is, and Jason made it very clear when he was on the stand, was that was my perspective. Not what you're showing to everybody. It was the perspective of me that he was a danger to me. And that's what the law looks at.
How did you think he did?
I think Jason was a little nervous. Because this is the first time publicly he's been able to tell his story. It was the first time I've heard his story. And I think people might find that to be unusual, but I specifically didn't ask him so that I could give an objective opinion when I heard it. And quite frankly, everything I could be told, somebody could try and subpoena me.
So. But you've seen that look on the faces of guys you've been, men and women that you've questioned in the interrogation room.
Mm-hmm.
It was the face of someone who's finally like, you know, I didn't do it, I wasn't there, and you do that over and over. And finally there's a crack, and they talk about it. And at that moment, they're reliving it, at least some of the, I'm not talking about the sociopaths, you know, with, you know, 50 bodies in the viaducts that they've left, but your average criminal, they see and reconstruct, they relive. And I saw him look, I'm not saying he's a criminal.
Well, and but I was going to say that. I don't think he is a criminal.
Right, but I saw him reconstructing or seeing it. I could see him seeing himself pull that trigger on that kid. Could you, or is it just, am I overprojecting?
I think he certainly felt, I think he felt everything that had gone on that night. I was viewing him on the stand, and I saw him pretty much reliving that. And it was very hard on him. He did not want, you know, for those who don't know Jason, he's a very gentle soul. He really is. But I think he was faced with a decision that he felt he had to take action. Otherwise, he or somebody else was going to be killed.
By the time people hear this podcast, the closing arguments will already have been made. We'll be waiting for the jury. So what's going to be worse for the city? Jason Van Dyke convicted or Jason Van Dyke walking away?
I have more faith in the city than I think a lot of people are giving the city credit for.
What do you mean? Because you've heard it. There'll be even Dan Herbert's brought it up. There could be violence and blah, blah, blah. And I've said it because on the day I wrote the first column on the video, I said it was going to tear the city apart. I didn't realize it was going to tear the politics of the city apart, but I can see people freaking out. And they're already talking about 71st and Jeffrey. And I don't know if it's going to be like a Bulls win celebration where things get broke or
worse. I think there are criminals that will take advantage of a situation and use it as an excuse to commit more crimes. I believe that the vast majority of the people in the city of Chicago will view what has occurred as we went to court and 12 people came in and tried to make the best decision they could. I certainly hope that Jason is found not guilty. If it's something other than that, certainly has a right to an appeal. However, I believe, and I truly believe, and I have been told this by many people, that there is not going to be violence. They want to bring attention to their causes. They want to make sure that when something happens, even if it's good or bad, that they are informed about it.
Do you think that now that Rahm Emanuel has pulled out of the race, that that's taken some air out of the protest balloon?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think whether he had something to do with the video being held or not, and I have no proof of that,
right.
I think that people held him responsible for what occurred in the city of Chicago. And by him stepping down, I think that they are looking to the next step, to a new mayor, and what they can expect out of city services, out of police, and out of the future plan of the city.
Last question. Kevin Graham, Fraternal Order of Police president. Are there young people who want to be police now? Or do they look at this Jason Van Dyke thing and say, no way? You think that's...
I think there are still people that want to be the police, who want to come out and try and help people. And, you know, we don't give credit to the very difficult job that they do every day. They put their lives on the line. They should be thanked for the hard work they do. And there are still police, there are still people that want to do this job, but as they keep tearing it down, you're going to have less and less people that want to do this job, and that's unfortunate.
I said last question, I got one more.
Okay.
When we started, you and me both, and we don't really know each other. It's not like
this is the first conversation.
Yeah, that we really sat down and had a talk. But when I was a kid reporter and you were a rookie cop, the police department was vastly different. People were brought onto the police department with the expectation not only that you would do your work and be legit, but that you could put your hand... Okay, it's about force, right? And you would put your hands on somebody. I mean, that was part of it. You'd have to deal with a drunk. I know, you know what?
Right.
I got in a bar fight once. Don't tell anybody. But I didn't throw ice, but I did try to break a guy's fist with my jaw, and I ended up wired up. The point being that people do crazy stuff, and cops have to separate people. In the years since, we've gone through so many configurations about what's the ideal police officer that I wonder, by going away from that person that could put their hands on somebody, did we go towards a person that may be more apt to tase them five times or shoot?
Well, certainly if I think the idea here is people don't put their hands on them and they have followed exactly the model that the police department has set out,
right.
and they stay exactly within the guidelines, then they feel they're safe. And the reality is that police work, and you can quote me on this, police work has too many variables and not enough constants.
and that there is no empirical way to show what a good police officer does or doesn't do. I think what a good police officer does is use his best common sense, listen to people, and when you need to put your hands on people, you put your hands on people, because you know what? Sometimes we need to take people into custody, and people don't want to go to jail. And that's the reality of this.
In closing, what's going to happen to the city of Chicago post Jason Van Dyke?
I think there's going to be a lot more discussion than people think. I think that they're going to want to know why he got off or why he was found guilty. And I think that people in the city of Chicago are intelligent. They want to know the answers, and they want to make sure that there are solutions if there are problems.
Kevin Graham, president of Fraternal Order of Police, thanks for being here on the Chicago Week.
Thanks for having me.
For Jeff Carlin at the studio, WGN Studios, putting this podcast together and eagerly anticipating the next time we meet in a few days. For Kevin Graham, president of the Fraternal Order of Police. For all the people of Chicago wondering what will happen with the outcome of the Jason Van Dyke trial. And for me, husband, father, Chicago Tribune columnist, mayoral candidate, this is John Cass. Thanks for visiting with us on this another edition of the Chicago Way on WGN+.